Paper 25, section 2, sold single column, page 275. Okay, so you remember from last time, we set the complex stage for this next section about the nature of this next group of beings, the universal conciliators. Let me just remind you of what we were doing there. Remember that there's this very dominant pattern phenomenon going on with all these beings that we appreciate as the Mendelian pattern, where you have a dominant and a recessive gene. And so you get in the offspring. You have a dominant-dominant, you have two dominant recessives, and you have a recessive-recessive. And that's, just obvious on the face of what you're reading. But we penetrated the next level and understood, what are the two factors that are playing together where in this particular mode, one is dominant and one is recessive. And that was the pairing that we've seen so much recently, the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor, the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. That fundamental relationship is playing out where with the Havona servitals that are the core beings, and they give the fact of the Havana servitals gives rise to the pattern in the universal conciliators, and then they also feed into the graduate guides. And in those Havana servitals, you have two parents. On one side, you have the master spirits, and the other side, you have their controller complements. That creator controller pairing with the seven supreme power directors. And in this mode, they're doing this creation on the upper surface of paradise so that rather than the paradise trinity aspect and the materialness, the power side in the supreme power directors being dominant, that their infinite spirit heritage side, it's kind of normally recessive, is being brought to dominancy by being put into the space of the upper surface of paradise. So then it synchronizes with the innately dominant infinite spirit side of the seven master spirits. For them, the Paradise Trinity is normally recessive. So, but see, they both have infinite spirit Paradise Trinity, and the dominant mode is the infinite spirit. So you're going to get an infinite spirit, dominant-dominant. You're going to get two infinite spirit, Paradise Trinity, dominant recessives, and then you're going to get a recessive-recessive, Paradise Trinity. And that leads to those fourth creatures in the servitals, the material ones. We're talking about, you can easily remember that there's this very, very deep, profound linkage between the Paradise Trinity and the Paradise Isle that's being expressed by just saying them that way. They have a common adjective, a fact called paradiseness, which is deeply mysterious, but nonetheless gives them an intimacy of relationship. And the Paradise Trinity is the only facet of deity, what the rest of that sentence is that I say so many times, that directly engages infinity. And you're like when you talk about the cosmos infinite, that when you're talking about reality, it's the only facet of deity that directly engages. All the other facets of deity are indirect. So you have this. That's what the phenomenon we're seeing. We have a spiritness and a trinityness, and in this mode, where the spirit is dominant. The infinite spirit side is dominant. You're not bringing out sort of a spirit side of the Paradise Trinity. You're bringing out this recessive material or individuality aspect. Okay, so when we went through all that, the one thing that was a little bit vague, the way they stated it, and you kind of, if you were really trying to understand all the details as you're going through, you would have noticed that. It's like, well, okay, they say there's 1,000 of these servitals that are brought into existence at a time. And they, you know, they were just saying that you had the seven master spirits and the seven supreme power directors. It's like, well, I mean, how am I supposed to be thinking about this? Are, you know, seven of them doing some subset of 1,000? I mean, it's like, or what? Well, they're going to give you that explanation as we start up here. And you're going to see that this action on paradise has a ramification out in the super universe level. And you're going from a singular fact of the aisle to a sevenfold fact, right? And so, you know, don't be surprised if that's, you know, that's the phenomenon. You see, whenever there's this relationship between the central universe or the aisle out there, you have this fundamental reflective relationship between 1 and 7, usually. Yeah. All right, so let's just read that first little paragraph, and then I'll see if you can figure out what the next paragraph says.
To the universal conciliators. For every Havana servital created, 7 universal conciliators are brought into being, 1 in each super universe. This creative enactment involves a definite super universe technique of reflective response to transactions taking place on paradise.
Okay, so without reading the next paragraph, have you gotten into the spirit of the revelation enough where you go, oh, I know how that's going to be implemented? Can you speculate in advance what the next paragraph is going to say? If the master spirits are doing something on paradise and it's going to get reflected out, when what's the immediate linkage that gets it out there? The relationship between the 7 master spirits and what's out there?
Reflective.
The 7 reflective mother spirits that are in each super universe. Now, that reflective mother spirit presence is in any given super universe. I mean, get yourself in the mode where you logically know, it's like, well, okay, I know what it's got to say next. The only logical possibility is that fundamental linkage between the father-like individual, the master spirit, and the mother-like, presence, which is this complex thing. There's 7 reflective spirits, but they have 1 mother deity together. That mother deity, that linkage between the father-like and the mother-like, that's how this is getting expressed out there. And so you make that guess, and then you go, let's see what the next paragraph says.
On the headquarters worlds of the 7 super universes, there function the 7 reflections of the 7 master spirits. It is difficult to undertake to portray the natures of these reflective spirits to material minds. They are true personalities. Still, each member of a super universe group is perfectly reflective of just 1 of the 7 master spirits. And every time the master spirits associate themselves with the power directors for the purpose of creating a group of Havana servitals, there is a simultaneous focalization of 1 of the reflective spirits in each of the super universe groups. And forthwith and full-fledgedly, an equal number of universal conciliators appear on the headquarters worlds of the super creations. If, in the creation of servitals, Master Spirit number 7 should take the initiative, none but the reflective spirits of the 7th order would become pregnant with conciliators. And concurrently with the creation of 1,000 Orvantan-like servitals, 1,000 of the 7th order conciliators would appear on each super universe capital. Out of these episodes reflecting the sevenfold nature of the master spirits arise the 7 created orders of conciliators serving on each super universe.
In each super universe.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just pick up that loose end first, and we'll get all the juicy details in there. So, see, finally now they explain, oh, I get it. It's not all 7 at once. It's 1 at a time making 1,000. Okay, so That's how that works. And it's like, okay, that's a lot easier. I can divide 1,000 by 1. It's trickier to divide it by 7. So that's the process. You have one of them making one flavor, and then another one makes it, another flavor. So you have these 7 existential flavors. I'm saying that way because we'll see in a little bit. There's more to the story, but they start out existentially, just in the nature of their existence, with 7 distinct flavors, 7 distinct types from the 7 different master spirits. Now, let's bring it, bring this out first. So when you look at the psychic circles and the sevenfold, when we've talked about this, I mean, especially when we first brought this out, we spent some time talking about it, and we noticed that the main thing that gets expressed in this chart that's not directly there as a column in the Revelation is this column of the Cosmic Mothers. And in the Revelation, when you're talking about God the Sevenfold, they'll often not just say Creator Sons. They'll say Creator Sons and Creator Mother Spirits for that lowest level. And it makes it look kind of odd when you think about it. It's like, well, what about the Ancients of Days and the Master Spirits? Shouldn't there be some parallel nature to that? I mean, why is, shouldn't all three levels have 2 sides instead of just the bottom level having a father and a mother side? The answer is yes, they do. Like we see here, at the individual super universe level, you have the reflective mother spirits, like we're talking about now. And then at the collective super universe level, you have the creative mother agencies. Okay, every one of those levels does have 2 sides, and they are creators too. You can, even see that the way they create, used a parallel construct for the creative mother agencies, like the creative mother spirits. Okay, and you can see it here. These reflective mother spirits are directly involved in the creation of a being. Okay, but notice the other thing they bring in there. Why is it that when they list the things in the book, why don't they list those other 2? Well, first of all, the creative mother agencies, they're mothers relative to you only post paradise as a during your finality career, so post ascension, and so they're not allowed to talk about that. They're just allowed to talk about the ascension career. So, that's one reason why they didn't put that there. And they just mentioned kind of the reason that they didn't confuse you, in a sense, initially, by making it look like the reflective mother spirits and the creative mother agencies should be thought of in very similar fashion. Look what they just pointed out, that they are true personalities, like the creative mother spirits, especially when they're creative mother spirits, and not just creative spirits. Still, etc. And one of the stills that you could put there is what we saw when we read about them back a few papers back. Remember how the only way that you really kind of can interact with them is through their reflective image aids. They're a lot like the creative spirit is a person before she's a creative mother spirit, but not to anyone except the creator son. They're by and large, their personal nature is not really finitely manifest. It's up there in a transcendent space, of direct expression. And they only can sort of express themselves through these avatar-like beings, these reflective image aids that are sort of their face in the finite. Okay? So that's why. They are definitely creators. And when they're involved in creative things, it's going to be in a relatively transcendent mode. I mean, look at what's happening here. So you have this actual creative act directly going on the aisle, absolutely transcendent of everything, you know, and then something is filtering down from above and, you know, casting a shadow into the finite, you know, and it's coming through this relatively transcendent conduit of the reflective mother spirits. Okay? You notice, you know, they also just say reflective spirits and not reflective mother spirits. I think we mentioned that back when we talked about them. I mean, for one thing, we aren't up to paper 117 yet. And that's always in play. We're going to bring up them and talk about them as mothers when we start talking about Sakanafim. They indirectly certainly bring it up here. When they say none but the reflective spirit of the seventh order would become pregnant with conciliators. Are fathers pregnant or mothers pregnant? I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the reflective mother spirits are mothers. You know, or the reflective spirits are reflective mother spirits. And for the more advanced student, did you notice another little special word that they threw in there? When we were talking about the complexities of the Supreme, so you're reading along in here and you see, and every time the master spirits associate themselves with the power directors for the purpose of creating a group of Avona servitals, there is a simultaneous focalization. Okay. Remember when we talked about the it, the she, and the he aspect when you're talking about the Supreme? The it, the Almighty Supreme, that's the summarizer. The she, the Universal Mother, is the focalizer. Okay. And then the encompasser, the he, is the Supreme Mind, the Supreme Being, and the transcendental being. Yeah. So, you know, not only is a pregnant a mother word that anyone can recognize, focalization, see, that's bringing in mother deity. So that is the process. It's that linkage. And like we were talking about this sort of new recognition of more the functional fact of mother deity, that you have this ubiquitous presence that a being coalesces in. And here we see it's a ubiquity that, you know, even transcends the individual super universe, because it has to be intimate with a master spirit and a supreme power director that's on paradise. So it's as if she is there and on the super universe headquarters simultaneously, and at that ubiquity. And so, sort of in a causal sense, it, you know, the coalescence starts on paradise but finishes on the super universe capital within her presence. And and then you have that mother deity, you know, is a common womb for all seven master spirits, as they're pointing out. There's seven different avenues into that. So each of the seven master spirits can bring universal conciliators into existence on Universa. And all seven of them can bring conciliators into existence on the capital of the first super universe, which is C-versa. Right? Yeah, remember, it's just, you know, they're going 3 times 1, 3 times 2, 3, you know, so. That's just, you know, the way they're naming them. Use the 21st letter of the alphabet. That's why it's U-versa. Okay, so that's the process then. So you end up with, you make 1,000 servitals, and it gets, those 1,000 get duplicated 7 times in this downstepped expression in each superuniverse. You know, so master spirit number 1 makes 1,000 cervicals, and you get 7,000 Master 1 spirit-like cervicals in the 7 super universes, and Master Spirit number 2 makes 1,000 cervicals, and you get 1,000 universal conciliators. Did I say cervicals the last time? Anyway, you know what I meant. You get 1,000 universal conciliators, in each of the super universes, etc., until you have it all. And why do you need, why do you have the sevenfold mother? And why do you need all 7 different flavors of universal conciliators in every super universe? We've talked about this. There's 7 schemes, right? But is it, there's only one scheme in each super universe? No. I mean, there's one scheme that's dominant in each super universe, but all 7 schemes are in each super universe. I mean, this is another reminder. If we were only the ascension scheme in the 7 super universe, we wouldn't have the 6 other flavors of universal conciliators. But the 6 other schemes are here. They're just not dominant. They're recessive. Okay. So that's another dominant recessive thing they're going to mention in a minute. I mean, the 7th master spirit is dominant here. But the other 6 are recessive here. Okay. So this is bringing in a new way of thinking about a number of relationships, to use that Mendelian pattern, that Mendelian concept of dominant recessive. All right, let's see. Was there anything else in there? Maybe just in passing. Remember how they mentioned the midware, connection, and we were talking about that. The fascinating thing about either primary or secondary midwares coming into existence, that they're there full-fledgedly as adult beings. They just coalesce in the womb of the mother. As they invoke that same thing here. Forthwith and full-fledgedly, an equal number of universal conciliators appear on the headquarters worlds of the super creations. So it's the analogous process. It's at a very high level. As a matter of fact, you can see this is obviously source sort of levels for these lower expressions. All right.
Conciliators of pre-paradise status do not serve interchangeably between super universes, being restricted to their native segments of creation. Every super universe core, embracing 1/7 of each created order, therefore spends a very long time under the influence of one of the master spirits to the exclusion of the others. For while all 7 are reflected on the super universe capitals, only one is dominant in each super creation.
See, there it is. Okay. And so they're using that dominant recessive, and of course, indirectly, they're tying the recessive to this reflected. And it's like, well, is there such a direct link that I can understand? We know this reflected expression was manifested via Mother Deity. And what's the source of Mother Deity? The Paradise Trinity. And what's the recessive element that we're talking about? The Paradise Trinity. The dominance, the Infinite Spirit. Okay, so this is another way, that you can think about those 7 master spirits all engaging a single super universe. 1 is dominant, 6 are recessive, because they're reflected. But as they're about to point out, and let me just use the verbiage so that you can understand it in the next sentence. In the same way that we talk about at the local universe, it's a universe. So it's a womb, and it's both a spiritual and a mindal womb. It's a spirit mind, spirit-mind womb. Both those presences are being implemented by one being, the Creative Mother Spirit. But at super universe level, it's more complicated. Again, there's a spiritual womb and a mindal womb. They're implemented separately. There's a directly Within the super universe, there's a mindal womb from that those seven reflective mother spirits. But there's, you know, an encompassing spiritual womb from one of the master spirits. And that's when you're working your way, you know, in, you get to your super universe capital, then you go to the seventh circuit of Avona, and you get to the sixth circuit of Avona as a graduate spirit. You just graduated from something, obviously. If they're now calling you a graduate spirit, what did you graduate from? What were you just birthed out of? The spiritual womb of your master spirit. In order to get from the seventh to the sixth circuit, you have to transcend to a degree. Obviously, it's going to be an inner life transcendence, but you have to transcend your super universe master spirit. Okay? You have to be birthed out of that womb. You have to get above that presence into some common, you know, transcendent presence. Okay, but that's what they're just about to evoke, that spiritual womb, you know, of a given master spirit in his specific super universe. Okay, so read.
Each of the seven super creations is actually pervaded by that one of the master spirits who presides over its destinies. Each super universe thus becomes like a gigantic mirror reflecting the nature and character of the supervising master spirit. And all of this is further continued in every subsidiary local universe by the presence and function of the creative mother spirits. The effect of such an environment upon evolutionary growth is so profound that in their post-super universe careers, the conciliators collectively manifest 49 experiential viewpoints or insights, each angular, hence incomplete, but all mutually compensatory and together tending to encompass the circle of supremacy.
Okay. See, so there, that spiritual womb, that literal presence, pervaded by that spiritual presence of that spiritual womb. When they say, and all of this is further continued in every subsidiary local universe by the presence and function of the creative mother spirits, why? Okay, why is her presence some sort of an extension of this master spirit presence that they're talking about directly in the paragraph? Do you remember what we learned about the creative mother spirits and they're being brought into existence on paradise? There's a step in that process that explains that. Do you remember what it is? They come out of the infinite spirit, but then what happens? They go out with the Creator Son?
No. Master
what?
Spirit.
They're immediately absorbed into a Master Spirit, right? Enveloped. Okay? They're going to get flavored, okay? Pervaded. So when we talk about Nebadon as a spirit-mind womb, the spirit part has a particular flavor, okay, of the seventh Master Spirit. Because the Master Spirit tuned her to him, you know, by full immersion within his nature. Okay, and so all the creative mother spirits are the same. When they, you know, because they're all initially flavored, you know, by one Master Spirit. So you have this commonality, we've mentioned that before, that uniformity of the creative mother spirits. As their initial existential starting point. But, of course, the evolution in every local universe is different, so they're going to get a different experiential coloring. And look, that's what they're talking about here. You have, you see, you start out with seven existential types or, you know, flavorings, colorings, whatever word you want to use, of universal conciliators. But after a long time steeping in the experiential stew of a given super universe, you get seven subflavors. Okay, so you end up with 49 different flavors. A combination of existential and experiential, you know, nature and what they acquire through experience ends up making 49 different types, very distinct.
Existential one is experientially seven.
Right. Existential two is experientially seven, et cetera.
Right.
Yeah. See, they very purposely, manifest 49 experiential viewpoints. But they started with seven existential viewpoints. Mm-hmm. End up with 49 experiential viewpoints. I love that using angular, to really think of the radial aspect of going around the super universe level.
Yeah, that's cool.
And they encompass the circle of capital S supremacy, the functioning of deity on the supreme level. You go through all this, and look at we're talking about the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor, and we're talking about the Paradise Trinity, and we're talking about Mother Deity, and we're just talking about deity, like capital S supremacy. You don't need the Father, the Son, and the conjoint actor to talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the nature of the domain that we exist in. There's existential deity from the Father through the Son with the spear point, the God of action. That's what actually engages. And then the Trinity coming around the other way. And engaging, and the two meet. And the Trinity of Supremacy meets the God of Action, and all these sorts of things start happening. Okay, so when you're thinking like that, talking like that, you're just completely into the fifth epical revelation. You've left behind any historical precedent. You've left behind anything that Jesus ever said. You're fully into the fifth. When the Father, is God as transcendence very definitively now. And you want to talk about what's actually going on inside, and he's not personally present there. So what is? That's what this revelation is about. If you don't approach it that way, you'll put new wine in old wineskins. If you make your understanding of all these endless things that they talk about via the Father, you're going to end up with the same kind. You're not going to end up with a philosophy. You're just going to end up with a religion. And you're going to end up with a religion very much like what humans have always ended up with. A religion that isn't a fundamental expression of trust and faith. You're going to end up with a religion that's an expression of magic and fear. You're going to end up with basically the same old fear-based religion in an old wineskin. So, it's in the old wineskin. You got new wine. You'll use all kinds of words that like universal conciliators, but in the end, it's just going to be some meaningless magical thing that you're not going to figure out how it has anything to do with your life anyway, so you never read this section again anyway. But, you have to just recognize that. If you don't want to just end up, with a reworked notion of magic and fear, and you're desperately trying to find some faith to assuage your fear, and hoping that the magic man fixes your problems or the world's problems or something. If you want to get out of that mode, you have to have the courage to let go of the Father. He had the courage to let go of infinity. You should be able to have the courage to let go of Him. And begin this process of understanding how things really work and where that thing called trust actually comes in. When you go past the initiation thing that the Father does with faith, you've got to go beyond the Father to something else. You have to have something solid to go to actually acquire this next step of maturing faith into living faith, into trust, or assurance that it's never going to be there. So that's what we're about. That's why this is so important. It's important to just, you know, reform the whole way you approach the universe and your relationship. You know, let it be about what's going on within, instead of being delusionally, magically connected to the God of transcendence on the outside of infinity, which you obviously aren't on the outside of infinity. You're on the inside. All right. Let's see. Okay, let's just get some more here.
In each super universe, the universal conciliators find themselves strangely and innately segregated into groups of four, associations in which they continue to serve. In each group, three are spirit personalities, and one, like the fourth creatures of the servitals, is a semi-material being. This quartet constitutes a conciliating commission and is made up as follows. 1. The judge-arbiter, the one unanimously designated by the other three as the most competent and best qualified to act as judicial head of the group.
Okay, so just stop there a second. Okay, so it's clear that this reflecting of the action on paradise out to the super universes is a very tight parallel. You didn't break the fourfold Mendelian pattern. It came right down. You have a dominant, two dominant recessives, and a recessive. I mean, obviously, number one here is
dominant.
Right. I mean, he's the spirit one. He's the dominant. He's double dominant. That's why he's unanimously designated. Everyone knows he's dominant. He should be dominating the group. Okay?
Alpha.
Right? And now...
they never disagree about it.
Right. I mean, it's just a fact. You can't argue with genetics. Especially this very high divine level of genetics. Okay. Now, you could call them all judge arbiters, in a way. But there's the judge arbiter of the judge arbiters. So that's really kind of the sense. Now, why do I say that? Well, I mean, as you either know or you'll see as we read here, I mean, they're all involved in the judging process. So that applies to all of them. Arbiter, that word arbiter, does anyone know? I mean, you know that we often use it, you're have an arbiter in disputes. There's arbitration of a dispute. You probably have a sense of how that process is set up. I mean, when the arbiter makes his decision, that's it. There's no appealing or anything. That you're going to see that's here, if you don't remember that. So that's one reason why they use that word arbiter, because it has that definitive last word sort of implication to it. But then the literal etymology of the word, the literal meaning of the word, it means it's someone that comes or goes to the point of conflict. And that, and that's what they are. They're these roving commissions. So it's a really great word to use. It has the whole judicial aspect to it, plus, literally, it has that roving element to it. All right, so now just let's read the next three. And see if you can, appreciate which one's dominant recessive, which one's recessive. Okay.
2, the spirit advocate, the one appointed by the judge arbiter to present evidence and to safeguard the rights of all personalities involved in any matter assigned to the adjudication of the conciliating commission. 3, the divine executioner, the conciliator qualified by inherent nature to make contact with the material beings of the realms and to execute the decisions of the commission. Divine executioners, being fourth creatures, quasi-material beings, are almost but not quite visible to the short-range vision of the mortal races. 4, the recorder, The remaining member of the commission automatically becomes the recorder, the clerk of the tribunal. He makes certain that all records are properly prepared for the archives of the super universe and for the records of the local universe. If the commission is serving on an evolutionary world, a third report, with the assistance of the executioner, is prepared for the physical records of the system government of the jurisdiction.
Okay. All right, so before we read that last little summary paragraph there, or that next little summary paragraph, I mean, who are the two dominant recesses?
Well, they gave you the fourth.
Right, well.
The only one, two left.
Right.
The recorder and the spirit advocate
are the two dominant recesses, and obviously the recessive is the divine executioner.
Right.
Okay? You know, and so now, you know, think about, you have, with this dominant recessive pattern, you know, there's a measure of understanding by just using the unity individuality contrast. Spirit side, the unity, you know, the other side, the individuality. So you have the judge arbiter, you know, he's got the unity element fully, you know, before him. He's going to make sure that it's definitively tuned to the unity of the circumstance. And then you have two different types of individuals that transition from that unity down towards the individuality of the situation, like recording the details, you know, in the context of unity, or, see, it's a spirit advocate, you know, or engaging, being an advocate, you know, being a voice, you know, for the individual, you know, if it's not literally an individual, but, you know, the group or whatever that's involved, you know, and making sure that the relationship of that individual to unity is made clear. He's a spirit advocate. He's not just going to advocate for the individuality of the situation. Okay? So very, very important that you have a dominant recessive for those two roles, a link. Okay, and then the individuality, the pure individuality, you know, where the rubber meets the road, that's the divine executioner. Okay, and we see that it's not just, you know, sort of philosophically individuality, but, you know, it literally almost comes down to this level of material individuality. He's almost visible to us.
Whether you want him to or not.
And now, you know, here's another reference to that short range, that thought is so intriguing. In what sense? It's not the electromagnetic spectrum.
Right.
You know, every mystical person, you know, that tries to imagine other things, they constrain themselves to the ignorance of mankind. You know, they think they're on cutting edge by using scientific terms like the electromagnetic spectrum. You know, but that's just a very crude, ignorant fact in reality, that there's a spectrum there, you know, and there's the visible, and close to it is, you know, the ultraviolet, and close to it is the infrared. No, it's not, has nothing to do with that. I mean, this is a knob, like we've talked about. This is that mysterious knob that you can turn, and you can turn it just a little bit, and now my hand passes through this secondary midware, and he can turn it just a little bit, and now my hand hits him. Yeah, it isn't because he went infrared and then back to visible.
No.
Okay? I mean, you can, you know, walk around with infrared goggles as much as you like, and you're not going to see any, you know, any secondary midwares, you know, or an ultraviolet camera or something. I mean,
yeah,
it has nothing to do with that. I mean, and this is intriguing. If you knew,
short range.
Right? I mean, this, you know, that's the electromagnetic spectrum you can think of as horizontal.
Yeah.
I mean, this is some sort of a vertical closeness, you know, and movement.
Yeah.
He is just slightly above us, see, in energy nature, where all he has to do is sneeze and then you could touch him. Okay, and he's really almost like this flesh and blood stuff. Very, you know, fascinating fact.
In what sense? That's exactly the question.
Right. Now, if you knew In what sense? You know, you'd have the key to a whole new dimension of physics.
They might have to sequester you.
Right. I mean, that's intriguing stuff. Okay, so there they are. Why don't you just read that next? Yeah.
When in session, a commission functions as a group of three, since the advocate is detached during adjudication and participates in the formulation of the verdict only at the conclusion of the hearing. Hence, these commissions are sometimes called referee trios.
Okay, so now we're going to start transitioning into talking about what they're doing. So that's the normal way they function. But you can see, even the advocate, you know, it could also be called a judge, arbiter. I mean, he's involved, he participates in the formulation of the verdict. They all do, you know, even the recorder. They're all judge advocates in a sense. But they function in this mode where one of them, bridges the ignorance of the individual up to the level of this conciliating commission, that spirit advocate, so that group or, you know, individual's concerns are not slighted in any way. And so it's basically three and one, and they're really working, and then they come back together as four. All right?
The conciliators are of great value in keeping the universe of universes running smoothly. Traversing space at the seraphic rate of triple velocity, they serve as the traveling courts of the worlds, commissions devoted to the quick adjudication of minor difficulties. Were it not for these mobile and eminently fair commissions, the tribunals of the spheres would be hopelessly overspread with the minor misunderstandings of the realms. These referee trios do not pass upon matters of eternal import. The soul, the eternal prospects of a creature of time, is never placed in jeopardy by their acts. Conciliators do not deal with questions extending beyond the temporal existence and the cosmic welfare of the creatures of time. But when a commission has once accepted jurisdiction of a problem, its rulings are final and always unanimous. There is no appeal from the decision of the judge arbiter.
See, there's that last line. Why the word arbiter really works, you know, in that sense.
You think their velocity is limited by the executioners?
Well, see, yeah, and isn't this interesting that they, you know, this is a rare exception. When they point out where you have one of the lower beings relative to velocity stuff here, who's self-locomoting but obeys that same, you know, one times, two times, three times the speed of light, you know, limitation stuff. So they are... The fact that they have such a definitive relationship to the mother, and the mothers are producing all the different angels, seems to be coming out here in this physics of their relationship to self-transport. It's an interesting thing.
We would have been here sooner, but for that, such a boating.
But of course, as we read on, I mean, the triple velocity thing is overcome basically by being everywhere, so they don't really have to travel that much. You know, if something needs to be adjudicated here on this planet, well, they're already here, okay? And that's the main way. You know, and it needs to be there. There needs to be enough of them that they're, you know, basically ubiquitously present, because three times the speed of light is darn slow, okay, relative to the size of the super universe.
They have to be close to anywhere they need it.
Yeah, so you got to have them spread out a lot. Okay, now this last paragraph begins the transition to the next section. These referee trios do not pass upon matters of eternal import. The soul, the eternal prospects of a creature of time. The soul is never placed in jeopardy by their acts. Okay, what's between the lines there? You know, which basically comes out in the next sentence, but... Okay, they do not pass upon matters of eternal import. Now, they don't pass upon matters about whether or not to extinguish your soul, your immortal self, but obviously, you know, there's a foreboding subtext there of they do pass upon issues of your mortal,
temporal.
You know, so when they say conciliators do not deal with questions extending beyond the temporal existence, okay, they mean that directly.
Yeah.
Are you going to exist tomorrow as a mortal creature?
Okay.
Yeah. Cosmic welfare and the creatures of time. Again, I'm purposely, you know, bringing in that foreshadowing of this foreboding, because this is a pretty significant transition point in the fifth epical revelation. If you've been reading from page one up to here, you need to ask yourself a very sincere question right now. Do you, do you have great courage? Okay. Do you have absolute trust? If you don't, if the answer to those questions is no, you need to put this book down right here before you read the next section. It needs to stop right here. And you need to find a more graceful, gracious revelation. Okay? Because this is where, you're going to start to be challenged. And if you're fearful, you shouldn't be reading what comes next. They're crossing the line of that akin to a betrayal of trust thing that sometimes they can't cross. In a sense, they're crossing it some here. Only the brave really should be going beyond this point. Okay. Because they're going to start telling you things that if you're not courageous and if you don't have absolute confidence in your Heavenly Father's overcare, you are going to be, fraught with fear, because you're going to see, they're going to point out, there's all kinds of fearful things that we've imagined that have a measure of truth to them that they're about to reveal. Okay. So this next section. Why are they called universal conciliators? You can already appreciate why they're called conciliators. You know, they're bringing two sides together here. Why universal? The far-reaching service of conciliators. Yeah, that's why they're calling them universal conciliators. Well, what is it that's so far-reaching? And why did Chris just say, for the fearful, it will invoke terror? Let's read on. It's almost Halloween anyway.
Nobody's exiting the room. He's got the keys. You would leave if you could.
3, the far-reaching service of conciliators. Conciliators maintain group headquarters on the capital of their super universe, where their primary reserve corps is held. Their secondary reserves are stationed on the capitals of the local universes. The younger and less experienced commissioners begin their service on the lower worlds, worlds like Urantia, and are advanced to the adjudication of greater problems after they have acquired riper experience.
Okay. So right off the bat, first paragraph. Okay. First of all, remember what they just said about the least experienced are sent down to us. Okay, and, if it hasn't invoked the comparison, when you're reading the previous section, they say divine execution or blah, 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 okay, they're making sure that you do invoke what you should be invoking. Okay, why of all the words they could have chosen, did they choose to say after they have acquired riper experience? I mean, riper? Why riper? Why not, you know, more? I mean, anything but riper. I mean, it seems like kind of an odd word. Well, except there's two words that, you know, are derived in parallel from the same root. Ripe and reap. Okay. Yeah, if you haven't thought of it already, they're saying, you know that myth you have about a grim reaper? There's a measure of truth to that. There actually is a grim reaper, not in the horror movie, you know, simplistic, materialistic way you think about it, but they are very material. They're right down there. You know, and after they have acquired reaper experience. It's another way you could read that sentence. Okay, they want you to read between the lines. Okay, reaper. It's like you think you've imagined a mighty reaper. Well, read on. You have no idea how mighty the real reaper is. Okay? He doesn't just carry a scythe. Okay? And wear a hood to shadow his skeletal form, you know? see, like I said, it's just, it's right there in the very first paragraph. Reaper experience. All right.
The order of conciliators is wholly dependable. Not one has ever gone astray. Though not infallible in wisdom and judgment, they are of unquestioned reliability and unerring in faithfulness. They take origin on the headquarters of a super universe and eventually return thereto, advancing through the following levels of universe service.
Well, that seemed less ominous. But there is it ends in a semicolon. It ends in a colon. Okay, so this whole bit, we haven't found a period yet. This whole bit about, you know, as an individual, notice how they're saying this. See, though not infallible in wisdom and judgment, as an individual. But you're going, well, I mean, they just said up here the rulings of the commission are final and always unanimous, et cetera, and there's no appeal. Well, how does that jive with not infallible in wisdom and judgment? Another example of beings that are like that are the Melchizedeks. As an individual, there can be little blind spots. But at some level of collectiveness, in this case, this is four, there are no blind spots. They've got every viewpoint covered. It's rock solid. So as long as the four of them work together as a team, you know, it's infallible. Okay, but they, you know, so there's a lesson there. You know, we all have measures of that. Where if we actually work together in true relationships as a team, we can make up for each of our limitations. You know, like say male and female. You know, the two viewpoints both have severe limitations that in and of themselves go off cliffs. Okay, if the two had worked together in a true relationship, a lot of those blind spots are eliminated in their stereoscopic vision. You know, Adam and Eve were never supposed to start going thinking on their own, thinking their viewpoint was holistic, that their viewpoint, how did they say that? I just read that. Oh, encompasses the circle of supremacy. Okay. No, by far it doesn't.
Somebody knew how to cleave them apart a little bit, tease them apart.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's an interesting little element. There's integrity in a system. Because, of course, you know, actually, you know, and I'm saying relationship, but you know, more precisely, it's not actually relationships. It's a system. You know, the four are connected to each other through the individuality of the whole and are an integrous system. They are holistic. Okay. This distinction is vital.
They're a cosmic system.
They're a cosmic system. And they have integrity because of the integrity of the individuality of the whole. The whole has an integrity because it has an individuality. It has a focalization. All right. So you can see what the, you know, you see we have a whole bunch of subsections here. They're going to take you through the journey. They're going to start down at mortal worlds.
Trenches.
Yeah, down in the trenches. And they're just going to work up, you know, every level, all the way up to the super universe capital level. Okay, so one step at a time here. Let's start down in the trenches.
One, conciliators to the worlds. Whenever the supervising personalities of the individual worlds become greatly perplexed or actually deadlocked concerning the proper procedure under existing circumstances, and if the matter is not of sufficient importance to be brought before the regularly constituted tribunals of the realm, then upon the receipt of a petition of two personalities, one from each contention, a conciliating commission will begin to function forthwith.
Okay, so maybe just note there, I mean, it's not about individual mortals here. It's not about the mortals at all, actually. It's about the supervisors. It's about the planetary government. You know, so the planetary prince and Adam and Eve just can't come to an agreement. So a conciliating commission has to step in, work out there, and dispute. Those sorts of things. No, they're not going to work on Congress. And believe me, you don't want them to work on Congress. You don't want them to work on you at all. Pray that they do not.
You don't want the reaper.
Because of what they're about to tell you.
When these administrative and jurisdictional difficulties have been placed in the hands of the conciliators for study and adjudication, they are supreme in authority. But they will not formulate a decision until all the evidence has been heard. And there is absolutely no limit to their authority to call witnesses from anywhere and everywhere. And while their decisions may not be appealed, sometimes matters so develop that the commission closes its records at a given point, concludes its opinions, and transfers the whole question to the higher tribunals of the realm.
Oh, see, so now you get a little bit of, now I understand is why there's no appeal. I mean, they do have the clarity of insight to know if this needs to be handled, you know, at a higher level, you know. I.e., so they appeal it, see, basically, see. Right. They close it and send it up to where it should be. You know, and they, but it, initially it seemed like it was something, but the more they dug into it, it's like, oh, now that we dig into it, no, this is not a minor issue. This needs to be handled up in the regular tribunals.
In other words, it's not necessarily they don't have the ability to reach a conclusion, but they
don't have the authority.
Investigation, they realize that it does.
Someone at a higher pay grade, you know, needs to take care of it. They don't have the authority to rule on those issues. Their research and their perspective will be of great service to the tribunals, you know, and it might really provide all that the higher tribunal needs in many ways to understand the issue, but they can't rule on such things.
These guys are first timers too.
Yeah, there's that. But that's not the main issue. That's not, I mean, the main issue is just, you know, these referee trios do not pass upon matters of eternal import. And if there's an eternal import element in it that they discover upon closer investigation, then it's got to go up. Okay. But you're already starting to see, I mean, some very striking statements. But they will not formulate a decision until all the evidence has been heard. And there is absolutely, okay, no limit to their authority to call witnesses from anywhere and everywhere. Okay? Those are strong words. I mean, when humans flippantly use absolutely, you know, in every other sentence, no, that's not what's going on here. They don't mean finitely, supremely, absinitely, ultimately, co-absolute. They mean absolutely. Okay. So that's a strong word, and that goes with, you know, no appeal, rulings are final. Okay, so they function in a pretty definitive mode. I mean, not unlike when they talk about a Most High Regent. You know, when they use words like absolute and, okay, so this is a very definitive. So when absoluteness enters the finite directly, it's a word we call prickly. Okay, not warm and fuzzy. Absolute things have no fuzziness to them. They are piercing, sharp, you know, whatever jabbing instrument you want to think of right there. Okay. You don't want to call for absoluteness to enter your finite life because there's no relativity to it. Boom. It's going to be very, very hard. Like the aisle is one of the absolutes. Doesn't bend. Okay. No relativity to it. Okay. That just reflect on that. You know, there's a lot of tendency to want to, you know, have the absolute hand of the Father enter into, you know, fixing Congress or, you know, like Steve was saying, or something like, no. You don't want, you know, that's like saying, I want the full manifestation of the Spirit of Truth. No, you don't. Not yet. mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. Okay, that's the Spirit of Truth. He's loosed the faithful lightning of his terrible swift sword. That's the swift sword is the Spirit of Truth, the double-edged blade that comes out of his mouth, you know, and cuts everything in two. Okay, you know, you don't want that kind of heavy hand unless it's necessary. All right, and then it gets even more exciting.
The commissioner's decisions are placed on the planetary records, and if necessary, are put into effect by the divine executioner. His power is very great, and the range of his activities on an inhabited world is very wide. Divine executioners are masterful manipulators of that which is in the interest of that which ought to be. Their work is sometimes carried out for the apparent welfare of the realm, and sometimes their acts on the worlds of time and space are difficult of explanation. Though executing decrees in defiance of neither natural law nor the ordained usages of the realm, they do oft-times effect their strange doings and enforce the mandates of the conciliators in accordance with the higher laws of the system administration.
Okay, so before we look at the details there, I mentioned this before. Let's see, this is paper 50 on the Planetary Princes. Remember when we were reading about the circuit supervisors? That was in the previous paper, Universe Circuit Supervisors, and they mentioned their assistants that are not revealed, and I pointed out there's another spot where they mention them. So you're talking about Planetary Princes, and it says, the roving commissions of conciliators serve and supplement the planetary tribunals, and both spirit and physical controllers are subject to the findings of these conciliators. The divine executioner, okay, so I pointed that out. When they say his power is very great, that's exactly what they mean. He has authority to wield all of the spirit controllers and all of the physical controllers. Okay, so there is nothing that can't be remade by his hand. Okay? And not only is it very great like that, all controllers can be ordered to do whatever he deems fit. And the range of his activities on an inhabited world is very wide. Okay. So the axe, you're probably not going to be able to get out of the way.
Sweeping
action. Okay. Absoluteness solves the problem absolutely. Problem solved. Okay. Okay. Like I said when we started reading this section, okay, there should be someone in the Old Testament that you're thinking about right now. And if you do have that courage and trust, you should be reminding yourself of what that individual said in light of this. Even though he slay me, yet will I serve him. Okay? Job. Indomitable Job. Okay? This is in play. Okay? If you have these commissions acting on a mortal world, people are going to die because God said so, and there's no appeal. Okay, the grim reaper, death. Death will be in play. Okay, even though he slay me, I get caught in the crossfire. In order to absolutely solve this problem, a whole bunch of people are going to die and there's going to be lots of collateral damage. Okay? They have full authority to terminate your mortal life, not your eternal life. Obviously, they can't do anything to that. But your mortal life is irrelevant. Individual mortal lives are irrelevant when these prickly beings act. We've talked about this many times. You know, do you want the Most High Regent to act? Someone who does not take any recognition of individual existence? Okay? Does what's the greatest good for the greatest number of people for the greatest length of time? Do you want that father-like hand, the non-evolutionary hand, the existential solution from the Father? Or does the mother's solution seem a little bit more appealing at this point? Okay? Okay. The hand of Dad that comes through like this, see, he has only one kind of hand. He has an absolute hand. Okay? And it's very, there's a lot of stark facts. Even though he slay you, do you trust him? No, do you trust him even while he's slaying you? Because the divine executioner is just, you know, eradicating a whole section of something.
What sort of existing circumstances would be greatly perplexing to personalities? Okay. I mean, what are we talking about here?
Right. So that's what I was going to say. So let's think about the details here now. Okay.
Give me an example.
Right. I just wanted to make sure you understood that, you know, there's no one fooling around here. This is full-on serious. And then it says, divine executioners are masterful manipulators of that which is in the interests of that which ought to be. I mean, the ominous poetry of that line, okay? That which is in the interests of that which ought to be. How many idealists have a thought of that which ought to be? Congress ought to be idealistic, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You can make an endless list, okay? Well, yeah, do you want to get to that ought to be by an evolutionary process or by fiat? Oh, I want it to be over quickly. Well, no, you don't. I guarantee you don't, because you don't understand what that means. You still believe in a religion of magic and fear. And magic fairy dust doesn't kill a million people. It makes butterflies and, you know,
rainbows
and unicorns and, okay?
But a typhoon hitting India today does.
Yeah, well, typhoons are nothing. Divine executioners are a lot. I mean, you know, they wield beings that can move galaxies, okay, circuit stars. Okay.
Their power's great.
Whoa. You know, they blink and they can make typhoons disappear or go away. That's trivial. You know, it's nothing. Okay, so their work is sometimes carried out for the apparent welfare, not the obvious welfare. Okay, the apparent welfare. I mean, they know it must be the welfare, but it's not apparent at all.
That's from
it's not apparent at all. Who's writing this paper?
Yeah,
flip to the back. Right. You flip to the back of the paper, and what do you find? Sponsored by one high in authority? Well, that's a pretty high vantage point. And he's saying, apparently that's for the welfare of that world. It's not obvious, not even to him. Okay, apparent welfare of the realm. Remember, realm means the world. And sometimes their acts on the worlds of time and space are difficult of explanation. Really? That many people? Really? That many? Though executing decrees in defiance of neither natural law nor the ordained usages of the realm, they do oft times affect their strange doings, and enforce the mandates of the conciliators in accordance with the higher laws of the system administration. I mean, you know, they just say that basically because they trust.
That's it. It's all about trust.
I mean, they have faith, trust, that this has to be for the greater good.
Yeah.
But it's not apparent.
Yeah.
Okay. You wield the master physical controllers. You could have the master physical controller lift the ocean up, hold it over a continent for 1,000 years, and then lower the ocean back down again. There's nothing you can. You can imagine anything. Anything's possible. Absolutely anything. Okay. Let's just start with a blank slate. Okay. That'd be a strange doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
They rebooted the planet.
All right. Let's just shake the Etch-a-Sketch and start over again. Okay, I'm speaking very, you know, kind of flippantly, but I want you to appreciate it. I mean, they're not allowing you any other thing. This is what they're saying. They started with Reaper, okay? And they've gotten into it, and they're talking about. Okay, now, remember I said, you know, remember that they pointed out that when you're on these mortal worlds, it's the younger and less experienced commissioners. Okay, let your idealism loose. Forget about your pragmatism. Just let your idealism loose on what we're thinking about here. Do you like what you're hearing? Okay. Do you want to believe in a universe like that, or a God like that? Do you feel, who in the heck gives this green, you know, wet behind the ears being the right to come in and exterminate that whole race of mortals? By what right does he think he can do that? Those foreign potentates. Okay. The fact that these are strange doings and apparent welfare. There was a being that said apparent schmerent.
Yeah.
His name is Lucifer.
Right.
He was watching this. He said, that's ridiculous. I mean, that can't be for any greater good. That's just utter devastation, Armageddon, destruction, and death by some arbitrary fiat person, says he's God. And sends out his divine executioner. I'm going to rise up against that. Okay? You know, if you go to the Lucifer Manifesto, in the second principle, Lucifer said he maintained that immortality was inherent in the system personalities, that resurrection was natural and automatic, and that all beings would live eternally except for the arbitrary and unjust acts of the executioners of the Ancients of Days. I demand justice. This is not fair. Is there any idealist on the planet that doesn't think exactly like this in the face of authority having to do something prickly? Okay. Everyone knows, I'm trying to, you know, Lucifer is not some fanciful, you know, abstract. I mean, you know Lucifer's thoughts. You've had Lucifer's thoughts. If you have spiritual consciousness and you've ever listened to the news, you've thought what Lucifer thought. Do you want to carry forward with Lucifer's thought and demand justice against this oppression of these arbitrary overlords? Do you want to overthrow the government or whatever and stop this oppression? This is the Lucifer, that's the Lucifer rebellion. And it's, and the point that put Lucifer over the edge are these beings and their strange doings. He could not abide with it. We've finally gotten, see, to the instigation of the rebellion. It was instigated in the mind of an ignorant being watching these beings act.
Yeah. And it wasn't hard to sway a lot of individuals.
I mean, anyone with spiritual consciousness who's not divine can be swayed. Because this is an all-compelling spiritual message. I mean, this—I mean, there is nothing seemingly true, beautiful, and good. You know, apparent welfare. there is nothing obviously true, beautiful, and good about this action. It's horrendous and seemingly utterly arbitrary. You know, not only do material beings die because the physical controllers are being wielded, but spirit beings die because this. Spirit controllers are being wielded too. They all die.
But what circumstances do you think were happening that the conciliators were in this local part of the universe adjudicating that Lucifer didn't like their decision?
I can't say. I mean, if I had to guess, it probably has to be something pretty significant. So it's probably a rebellion on a world. Remember, there's only been three system rebellions in Nebadon. But there's obviously been many, many single world rebellions.
Yeah.
You know, so there probably, for instance, were some single world rebellions in Satania.
Yeah.
And Lucifer Watch is, you know,
oceans got lifted.
What happened, you know, and it's like, this is wrong. This is just flat out wrong. Who gives them the right? I mean, we have free will, don't we? Who gives them the right to say that we can't do that? To step in and do that. All right, so, yeah, it's, you know, I mean, the only other thing that comes close to this paragraph is the trumpet paragraph. Okay? See, you know, we're told that those angels are the angels of the trumpets. And now we're told that this being is the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
And he's more powerful than you ever imagined. I mean, that's some really tough stuff. Okay. It's like, well, what about love and service? And can't we just talk about that? Yeah, in the fourth epical revelation, but not in the fifth. The fifth talks about the hardest of hardest things. It's not for the timid.
But can't we hold on to the hope and the trust that we've built?
Yes. You see, what you see here, what the fifth epical revelation is giving us that you didn't have before in the third and the fourth, say, is the other side of all the inevitabilities. Okay, and if you're going to have the full positive side of eternal life, the choice of eternal life, there has to be something, you know, to balance that on the other side, that you choose eternal life in contrast to oblivion. Okay, and the sort of the corollaries of oblivion. If someone is going to go down the path of iniquity, there's going to be collateral damage. Not eternal collateral damage, but there's sub-eternal collateral damage that's not in any way qualified. I mean, it's absolute, and it's, you know, you absolutely aren't alive anymore. You know, and these sort of things. I mean, it's just, you have these definitive lines that are drawn, and the way to, you know, if you have the courage, you should be able to take this on and say, I really, really, really want to absolutely consecrate myself, you know, to share the inner life with God, to be humble and patient, you know, and to do my best to grow, to be grown, so that the love of God can flow through me to others. I don't want to be part of a ruling by the corollaries of oblivion. Yeah. But I do know that actual harm can befall me, even if real harm can't. I might get slain, but yet will I serve him. If someday, somewhere, if it's not here on some other level as I go up, you know, remember we're going to go up levels here, an action like this catches me in the crossfire, that's not going to take, you know, turn my eyes from God.
Trust.
Now, mere faith is not going to get you through these facts. You have to have something solid, not something fuzzy. You have to fear not. You need full-on soul trust, rock solid, anchored in the aisle, immutable, all those words. all right. So, yeah, and you're left to just ponder, like, well, you know, it's the same quandary you have with the angels of the trumpets. It's like, well, what would be the actual circumstance? I can't tell you. All I know is what's been revealed to me and to you, that God will not be mocked. There's a bottom line to everything. And you can think that he's not the boss of you, but at some point, there's a line that's drawn. It's like, yes, he is. He's absolutely the boss of you. You have no say whatsoever about the form. You conform or cease to exist. All right, let's move up where it gets a little bit less prickly.
To conciliators to the system headquarters. From service on the evolutionary worlds, these commissions of four are advanced to duty on a system headquarters. Here they have much work to do, and they prove to be the understanding friends of men, angels, and other spirit beings. The referee trios are not so much concerned with personal differences as with group contentions and with misunderstandings arising between different orders of creatures, and on a system headquarters there live both spiritual and material beings, as well as the combined types, such as the material suns.
Okay. Before we get into kind of the notice to...
Did they really say that?
They said it, see? they wanted to bring full irony in. Who said he was the friend of men and angels?
Lucifer did.
Who proves to really be a friend? The very beings, that invoked him to start the rebellion in the first place. It comes full circle. The real friend of men and angels are the conciliating commissions, not Lucifer. That's a jab. That's a full-on jab.
Yeah.
You know, stick that in your pipe, Lucifer, and smoke it. Right. I mean, that's very purposeful. And, you know, and in that regard, you know, don't ever lose sight of the immediate relevance in our world. Beware of the person who steps forward and says, I am the friend, you know, of the common man. That's what the friend of men and angels means. I am the friend of the common man. I am the champion of the common man. Okay? I'm the demagogue. People's leader. Okay? The common man. Okay? That's the Lucifer, you know, voice speaking.
Chris, bad things happen with this, but how can you tell that it wasn't a divine dispensation?
Well, I mean, that's the contrast here. I mean, now you have to, your challenge is to see that when there's one of these incredible strange doings that we can only imagine, they don't give us an example. Must be pretty horrendous, though. Can you see that as a divine dispensation? That there's welfare, even though it's not apparent. That's the flip side. Every moment absolutely is a divine dispensation. It's exactly as it should be. God hasn't made a mistake. Even when he's slaying you, he hasn't made a mistake. It's like, well, I did nothing wrong. Obviously, this is a mistake. No, it's not. If you think it's a mistake, you believe in some magical, finite God. You don't believe in the real God. And you don't believe in the Father's way. The Father's way is evolution, which begins with complete imperfection. And nothing but conflict between individuals. See, we're going to leave behind the real gritty material level of this stuff, but we're going to go up in these increasingly higher levels. And, you know, you got absolute free will butting heads at every level. Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? You know, you don't go to the magic cloud where there's no butting heads. You know, you go to the mansion worlds and the constellation worlds, and there's free will. You know, remember, why does free will butt heads? Why doesn't it get along perfectly? Because it's absolutely unique. Your personality is absolutely separated from mine. There's no overlap. There's nothing natural about us getting along. The more personal we are, the harder it is to get along fundamentally, innately. More and more you have to choose to go through the individuality as a whole and link those two things together. We overlap as energy systems, but as persons we don't overlap at all. The only thing that can get us together into harmony is the Mother, because the Father made us absolutely, you know, unharmonized. he made us absolutely separate. Yep.
Well, I'm thinking, what is the dispensation? I mean, it was inaugurated when Jesus was bestowed, which is a spiritual.
Right, but there was a dispensation before that, and a dispensation before that. There's always a dispensation.
Oh, okay,
and it's always now.
What I'm getting at is, there has to be a beginning and an end to a dispensation.
Mm-hmm. But it's not talking about a temporal now. It's talking about the eternal now, touching time.
Well, what would terminate the dispensation? Would it be the recognition by all of Jesus?
Well, no. I mean, you're bringing in another issue. You're bringing in a temporal issue.
Okay.
Okay. And that statement about now is a divine dispensation, that's an eternity statement, not a time statement. It's pointing out that now exists ultimately because this first source and center exists. And the first source and center doesn't exist in time. He exists in eternity. So his hand, his divine hand on now is an eternal hand. The only way that you can actually directly see that now is a divine dispensation is if you've eternalized your viewpoint. If you can get outside of the moment or even outside of a dispensation, you know, in the sense you're thinking of, or even the whole sequence of dispensations, if you can see it beyond all of those downstepped, circumscribed, you know, shadows, so that in the midst of this slate wiping that we're talking about here, you can still see the welfare. You know, there's an eternity welfare, not a temporal welfare. You know, an eternal welfare, not a temporal welfare. So it's in that sense. I mean, just, okay. Yeah. You know, I don't misunderstand me. Please, you know, reflect on the more temporal dispensation things. But see that overriding all of those temporal issues is a changeless, constant hand of the Father that's always divine. It can't be anything but. The changeless thread through all of the temporal change is divine. So every moment, you know, is a divine dispensation, you know, in that eternity sense. There's two Greek words. If you're familiar with the Bible, yeah, Bible scholarship, you can reflect on that, contrast those two senses of the sequence of nows, the sequence of moments. Chronos and Kairos. Reflect on the, look those up and theological contemplations about the contrast between Chronos and Kairos.
How do you spell
K-Y? I'm terrible at spelling.
Yeah,
but
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I would think it would be K-Y-R-O-S.
I think it is, if I remember right.
And Chronos is probably K.
But anyway, it's, yeah, I mean, just the difference between the temporal and basically from our perspective, the supreme. You know, the changeless hand, the downstepped expression of eternity that's changeless relative to finite things. Okay, that there's a kairos in each moment of chronos. The Greeks 2,500 years ago contemplated this issue and gave words to it.
How do you spell those?
We'll figure it out afterwards. I can't tell you after that. I'm terrible at spelling. We'll figure it out. Okay. Let's see. Where were we? Okay. So let's kind of leave that the difficult stuff aside for the moment. See, now that we're going up, and you know they're not working with personal differences. It's more about group contentions, but they are contentions and misunderstandings. Okay, and it arises between different orders of creatures. You got them butting heads.
The moment the creators bring into existence evolving individuals with the power of choice, that moment a departure is made from the smooth working of divine perfection. Misunderstandings are certain to arise, and provision for fair adjustment of these honest differences of viewpoint must be made. We should all remember that the all-wise and all-powerful creators could have made the local universes just as perfect as Havona. No conciliating commissions need function in the central universe, but the creators did not choose in their all-wise wisdom to do this. And while they have produced universes which abound in differences and teem with difficulties, they have likewise provided the mechanisms and the means for composing all these differences and for harmonizing all these seeming confusion, all this seeming confusion.
Okay, so if you followed that here, amidst all the little confusion there, this is kind of relating to what we were just talking about. You have this, initial state of the universe that has all kinds of issues. And while they have produced universes which abound in differences and teem with difficulties, they have likewise provided the mechanisms and the means for composing all these differences and for harmonizing all this seeming confusion. The challenge is, you see, as we get higher up, your spiritual consciousness feels comfortable with the composing that happens. But when you get down to very stark individuation, you need to challenge yourself to be just as comfortable in your spiritual consciousness with the composing of that, the Father's way down there. It's the same thing. It's going to look very different, but it's the exact same Father's way. A warm, fuzzy, wonderful thing up on top and the harshest of things down in the bottom are one and the same thing, one and the same composing. The Father's way of getting to perfection. Yeah, there just is. Yep.
Excuse me. Mm-hmm. But going back to that previous paragraph,
mm-hmm.
I'm a little confused when it says the referee trios are not so much concerned with personal difficulties.
Difference, yeah.
But at the beginning of that paragraph, they talk about these commissions of four advanced studio and assistant headquarters.
Yeah, remember what they said in the previous section, where you have four of them, but one of the four becomes an advocate for the contending parties, and then the three stand there as the referee trio, they call them. Okay. And then once the positions have all been laid out, then that spirit advocate joins, and then there's four of them that rule. But they're three and one, and then they're four. Yeah. Okay.
The Constellation Conciliators. From service in the systems, the conciliators are promoted to the adjudication of the problems of a constellation, taking up the minor difficulties arising between its 100 systems of inhabited worlds. Not many problems developing on the constellation headquarters fall under their jurisdiction, but they are kept busy going from system to system, gathering evidence and preparing preliminary statements. If the contention is honest, if the difficulties arise out of sincere differences of opinion and honest diversity of viewpoints, no matter how few persons may be involved, no matter how apparently trivial the misunderstanding, a conciliating commission can always be had to pass upon the merits of the controversy.
So you can see when you get up to constellation level, not surprisingly, it begins to distinctly have a changing flavor. Because remember, that's the faithful ceiling. The big problems happen below that level. Mm-hmm. So obviously, it's not only the things that they're dealing with, but the kind of rulings that they dole out are going to be less prickly than they were down below.
Why this language, though? If the contention is honest, and if the difficulties arise out of sincere differences,
right,
at that level.
Right. See, so that's what I'm saying. They one of the first things they're doing is they're making sure that there's a real contention here. That what's in play is the real contrast between absolutely unique personalities. And the reason it tends to play in groups, we've talked about, you have the existential personality and then you have the personalized self. If you take a group of beings, their selves have a commonality. And so as personalities, there's a commonality to them, you know, even though their personalities are absolutely unique. So at the lower levels, you're not so much dealing with the absolute uniqueness, but the relative uniqueness of personality, where, you know, this group of beings as personalities have a commonality of character, and this group of beings, other group of beings, has a commonality of personal character, and the two are in contention. But the more you go up, you know, the more you have the potential for the absolute differential between two individuals to be in play. But of course, as the more you go up, also the more the individuals have, you know, they have a more and more divine character, and there's less contentions that are possible, because they have more and more of a relationship to the whole. So, you know, there's this give and take, see, between the two. That, you know, actually, when you really get to the point where you could have this real individual-to-individual contention, it's not really possible anymore. But you have these personalized selves and their groups, you know, that can be in contention. All right, up to the next notch.
Four, conciliators to the local universes. In this larger work of a universe, the commissioners are of great assistance to both the Melchizedeks and the magisterial sons, and to the constellation rulers and the hosts of personalities concerned with the coordination and administration of the 100 constellations. The different orders of seraphim and other residents of the headquarters spheres of a local universe also avail themselves of the help and decisions of the referee trios. It is almost impossible to explain the nature of those differences which may arise in the detailed affairs of a system, a constellation, or a universe. Difficulties do develop, but they are very unlike the petty trials and travails of material existence as it is lived on the evolutionary worlds.
Okay, that's kind of a jab. Okay, so two things there. I mean, you know, they just told you point blank that why they haven't been giving examples, because we really just don't have any way to understand the examples.
You mean the stuff between the Jews and the Muslims?
Okay, yeah, I want to make sure. Okay,
that's the problem.
So they use the word petty. There isn't a pettier word than petty. That's as petty as it gets. Okay. And look what they just, you know, okay, trials. What are trials? Okay, that's pain and suffering. They just dismissed them as petty, your pain and suffering. And if that wasn't bad enough, travails. Well, that's torture. Okay. They just dismissed that as petty. Okay. Right. So that should, again, challenge you. Can you start to relate to God at a higher level so that you don't end up in the Lucifer trap? Because if you stay down there and try to rationalize this, where your pain and suffering and torture are not petty, okay, down at the material level, and they're not petty at the material level, but it's from a spiritual vantage point, they're irrelevant, utterly irrelevant. Okay? Can you get your consciousness up to a higher point so that you don't get stuck in the why do bad things happen to good people?
Jesus was a good person. So
I mean,
bad things happen.
Real bad things don't happen to good people. See, you're calling things that are just trials and travails bad, material things. Those aren't spirit things, those are material things. Bad and good are spirit words, not material words. They don't have anything to do with how much it hurts when they poke you like that. Okay?
Doesn't that relate to Jesus' attitude when he was being scorned and mistreated, you know, before he went to the crucifixion. He spiritually was above that. It just seemingly didn't bother him.
In the midst of all that excruciating actual harm, he knew that there was no real harm at all. Not one iota of real harm, you know, was going on during that scourging, where they're tearing chunks of his hide out of his back. And, you know, I mean, you think you've experienced pain and suffering. Try scourging. Try Roman scourging. That'll redefine what you think is, you know, uncomfortable. Okay. You know.
But he refused to
admit. Right. He didn't live down there. Because he didn't live down there, he didn't, impose those issues on God. He didn't put those into God's hands. But humans do all the time. Why is God doing this to me? God is not doing that to you. Okay? The typhoon is doing that to you, or whatever. God is your spiritual father, not your material father. Okay?
And Jesus go through all this knowing that even beyond death, he would rise again. It was the resurrection.
Right.
So that none of this so-called trivial stuff could really hurt him.
Right. I mean, it wasn't doing anything to his soul. Roman scourging doesn't, you know, even make a dent in your soul. You know, being burned alive doesn't even singe your soul. Only you can singe your soul. No external agency can singe your soul. So that's the fourth epical revelation, the good news, that no real harm can befall you, that God is your spiritual father. You know, if you see it that way, you know, but instead it was Nathaniel, why do you constantly interpret it materially instead of spiritually? Why does everyone on the planet right now do the same thing? Why do they interpret all this stuff materially? But then you get to the fifth epical revelation, and, you know, it has to be predicated on that, because now they're going to tell you, but then there are material hands of the Father, like Most Highs and divine executioners and, you know, and trumpet blowers, and they do many strange things. Okay, so it isn't just other mortals, you know, that blow you up. You know, so that's taking it to the next notch. You know, that's what the fifth epical revelation is trying to really close the deal with what you should have begun with. Jesus gave us 2,000 years ago, to take that his faith that he was trying to initiate and mature it into living faith, trust, faith that's still alive in the midst of Armageddon at the hand of God. That kind of faith. The faith, you know, it's love and service. Job wanted to keep loving God and continue to serve him as he's being burned alive by the executioners in some, you know, conflagration. Okay? That's what he was challenging himself to have that kind of trust. That to his last breath, as he's evaporating, he's going to serve God.
Peter's wife.
Yeah, and Peter's wife. Great example. Yeah. You know, she just kept right on preaching. You know?
Being rendered by the animals.
Right. She's being eaten alive. Didn't stop her preaching one word. Can you do that?
Okay. 5. Conciliators to the super universe minor sectors. From the problems of local universes, the commissioners are advanced to the study of questions arising in the minor sectors of their super universe. The farther they ascend inward from the individual planets, the fewer are the material duties of the divine executioner. Gradually, he assumes a new role of mercy, justice, interpreter, at the same time being quasi-material, keeping the commission as a whole in sympathetic touch with the material aspects of its investigations.
Okay, so, okay. Mercy Justice Interpreter. That sounds much better than Grim Reaper.
He retires that Reaper.
You notice, see, once you leave the local universe behind, remember, that's, you know, the real evolutionary nuggets, the local universes. You know, above that, you have the divine rule of the super universe. So it's, you know, it definitely transitions there. Okay?
Six, conciliators to the super universe major sectors.
Oh, wait, before you read that, I just forgot. Mercy Justice, you know, why do they hyphen? I mean, remember, he has this definitive connection to the individuality, the justice. See, so he can really, you know, he can take the spiritual level, the unity level, the mercy, you know, and really show how it goes all the way down to a sharp individuality point. You know, he can really speak to the full extent of that association between unity and individuality, between mercy and justice. He can interpret that for in, he can be in between, inter, see.
Conciliators to the super universe major sectors. The character of the work of the commissioners continues to change as they advance. There is less and less of misunderstanding to adjudicate and more of mysterious phenomena to explain and interpret. From stage to stage, they are evolving from arbiters of differences to explainers of mysteries, judges evolving into interpretive teachers. Arbiters of those who through ignorance permit difficulties and misunderstandings to arise, they once were, but they are now becoming instructors of those who are sufficiently intelligent and tolerant to avoid clashes of mind and wars of opinion. The higher a creature's education, the more respect he has for the knowledge, experience, and opinions of others.
Are they using this opportunity to preach to us a little bit, do you think? Yeah. That same strange doings of the executioner stuff, down there, that's how it looked. Up here, it looks like explainers of mysteries. But you notice they gave you a little help how they're the one, they are related. Mystery, yeah. Apparently, it's pretty mysterious, though.
Yeah.
They are about the mysteries. Of things, either as explainers or as experiential doers and learners of such mystery. They know of that which they speak. Let me tell you about mysteries. There was this time when I was a divine executioner on this one planet, and everyone said, "Whoa, that's mysterious."
Let's break it down.
Yeah.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Where is the trumpeter mentioned?
At the end of paper 114 in the Master Seraphim, the Angels of Nation Life.
Gotcha. Thank you.
But notice, there's all this, you know, sufficiently intelligent and tolerant, all these little jabs. You know, think of paper 16, section 6, coming into here. To avoid clashes of mind and wars of opinion, have you gotten up above being kindred spirits? Are you kindred minds? See, you can have all of the kindred spiritness, you know, until you're blue in the face. I mean, at levels we can't even imagine. Okay, and there's all kinds of stark, prickly conflict between kindred spirits. You're not going to get the brotherhood of man with kindred spirits. It's not even that you don't even have the brotherhood of man at many levels up in the universe above us with just kindred spirits. You know, until you get up to that mind level of the major sectors and you really have high levels of kindred mind, okay, now we're talking about, you know, brotherhood of man. Okay? This is how delusional, you know, it is to think that, you know, some little magic thing is going to happen and we're going to have peace on earth. There is so much. We have to evolve the earth until it's like it's up at the major sector level. We have to have full-on kindred minds. We have to have a consecration to the universal harmony of God the Mother like we can't even imagine. Until the fifth epical revelation, no one even knew that was something we should be working on. Okay, they all thought it was about consecrating your will to the Father and being kindred spirits. It's like, well, that's the first step, step zero. That's the initiation. You know, you're miles and miles, first mile or second mile or third mile, you're miles and miles away from, you know, what the actual brother, you know, ability to have the brotherhood of man, where you don't need conciliators and sweeping acts to deal with us. Right.
Seven, conciliators to the super universe. Here, the conciliators become coordinate, four mutually understood and perfectly functioning arbiter teachers. The divine executioner is divested of retributive power and becomes physical, the physical voice of the spirit trio. By this time, these counselors and teachers have become expertly familiar with most of the actual problems and difficulties encountered in the conduct of super universe affairs. Thus, they become wonderful advisors and wise teachers of the ascending pilgrims who are in residence on the educational spheres surrounding the headquarters worlds of the super universes.
When did we talk about the super universe university and advisors? Oh, they've gotten up to the level of the previous section, the Halvona Servitals, going out there and helping at the Super Universe University. See, now they're part of that process. See, so so this reflective expression, you know, start at the bottom and evolve all the way up and ends up there side by side with the Halvona Servitals at the Super Universe Capitals helping us out as ascenders. That's a neat little, bringing it all back around again, tying a bow on it. And talking about taking the scythe away, notice here it's only when they get up there that they actually take it away. He's still walking around with it.
Yeah.
Until he gets up to the... Only then is the divine executioner divested. Just a little subtle reminder.
Yeah.
He's walking on the major sector level. You know, everyone's kindred minds, but he's still walking around just to remind everyone.
It's more symbolic, by the way.
All right.
All conciliators serve under the general supervision of the Ancients of Days and under the immediate direction of the Image Age aides until such time as they are advanced to paradise. During the paradise sojourn, they report to the master spirit who presides over the super universe of their origin.
Just one moment. See, notice that? So they're under the general supervision of the Ancients of Days. And it's that whole bit about the executioners of the Ancients of Days. You know, it's like those foreign potentates. What did they just tell you here? That's just the general supervision. The immediate direction is whom? The reflective mother. No, the reflective mother spirits. Speaking through the image aids, Mom is actually responsible for what Lucifer was mad about. Not Dad, not the super fathers. There, showing how that whole bit about the three times the speed of light. See, notice the closeness of connection to the mother at the individual super universe level. The reflective mother spirits, they're the ones that are actually... So that puts the creative mother spirits ordering her angels like she has in the wake of the rebellion in an interesting light, see? It's a downstepped expression of what the reflective mother spirits do through the executioners, telling her seraphim to, you know, see if you can augment as much sin as possible to get it out of their system. Very interesting little insight. Now, who's prickly now? Hell hath no fury.
They're trying to coordinate these parts that don't really fit together very well. And it's like, I don't think it's supposed to go like that. Yes, It will.
Remember that anvil and that hammer thing?
This is what it ought to look like. So here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because Bobby's not here tonight.
Let's read that again. They are the masterful manipulators of that which is in the interests of that which ought to be. Mom says, this ought to be. Let's make it so.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you're inspired to be something that ought to be.
I mean, the ancients of days, you know, are the rulers, but Mom takes it down to the trenches, see.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they're way up there in their high, lofty ivory tower on Uversa, and they can't, they never leave it. You know, they're just, you know, they have that vicegerent thing, you know. Mom brings it down. Rubber meets the road.
The super universe registries do not enumerate those conciliators who have passed beyond their jurisdiction, and such commissions are widely scattered through the grand universe. The last report of registry on Uversa gives the number operating in Orvantun as almost 18 trillion commissions, over 70 trillion individuals. But these are only a very small fraction of the multitude of conciliators that have been created in Orvantun. That number is of an altogether higher magnitude and is the equivalent of the total number of Havona servitals with allowances for the transmutation into graduate guides.
Yeah, remember how many numbers were, you know, we're talking about really big numbers, you know, that they don't even try to give us a sense of.
From time to time, as the numbers of the super universe conciliators increase, they are translated to the Council of Perfection on Paradise, from which they subsequently emerge as the coordinating core evolved by the Infinite Spirit for the universe of universes, a marvelous group of beings which is constantly increasing in numbers and efficiency. By experiential ascent and paradise training, they have acquired a unique grasp of the emerging reality of the Supreme Being, and they roam the universe of universes on special assignment. The members of a conciliating commission are never separated. A group of four forever serve together just as they were originally associated. Even in their glorified service, they continue to function as quartets of accumulated cosmic experience and perfected experiential wisdom. They are eternally associated as the embodiment of the supreme justice of time and space.
Remember how only the name servital? We pointed out, you know, that literally is to invoke that they are the embodiment. I used that expression. It's just they're doing the same thing here. Now, the servitals are the embodiment of the act of serving. That's what servital, the al suffix on a noun, means. Now here they're the embodiment of supreme justice in time and space. So you're always getting to that point. You know, either existentially they're made that way, or through experience. You know, all these beings are the embodiment of some aspect of infinity. You know, they are that thing. They don't just know about that thing. They are that thing. And just one other thing to note in passing here, I haven't emphasized, but you notice that the word coordinating comes up here occasionally, a mother word. You know, back there in subsection 4, it said that, you know, talking about constellation rulers and the host of personalities concerned with the coordination and administration of the 100 constellations. You know, here you see it again. They are translated to the Council of Perfection on Paradise, from which they subsequently emerge as the coordinating core evolved by the Infinite Spirit, the Infinite Mother Spirit, right? You see that they have this significant existential starting point, but the real point is to acquire a much larger experiential nature and have them, you know, have this significant relationship and to an expression of experiential deity. Notice, you know, I've pointed out, you got to look at closely when they say. By experiential ascent and paradise training, they have acquired a unique grasp of the emerging reality of the Supreme Being. Okay, not the emerged So not directly the Supreme Being. What is the emerging reality of the Supreme Being called? The Universal Mother. Okay? They become these embodiments of supreme justice in time and space. You know, this relationship to the Universal Mother, not just the lower mothers. Okay? So, I want to stress this all the time. Just be constantly looking for words like focalization, coordination, you know, et cetera. I mean, it's all there so that when you finally put two and two together, you can see that this story is not even about that downstepped expression of the Universal Father, the Supreme Father, the Supreme Being. I mean, when in the end, it's all about Mother. Yeah, and it's not even about those foreign potentates. Lucifer, was so, remember how they mentioned ignorance, when there's still ignorance? he was actually pointing to the wrong beings.
Yeah.
If he wants to get mad at someone, he should get mad at that person that's so transcendent that she says, talk to my avatar, okay? Well, that would really make him frustrated. He's like, talk to your avatar. I mean, talk to my hand. You know? you have to be comfortable with this very long-term, wide-scale, gentle engagement of things by the mother that is not going to have the... You can be immediately apparent of perfection. Your whole universe career is going to be filled with vistas that don't look like perfection, but they do look like perfecting. Now is a divine dispensation. Can you see the mother, the perfecting, the emerging reality? Okay. Don't demand that the emerged, the father, has to be there, and then it's not, and then you say, why do bad things happen to good people, and et cetera, and you get all wrapped around the axle. And the revelation is trying to help us with these long, struggling difficulties. But in the process of being able to explain it to us, so that we have this new transcendent peace that we can find, we have all these prickly things that they have to tell us at the same time, which don't make it any easier. So it's in the end. I know we're running over time here, but in the end, just be reminded of that double-edged sword. That's where, if you want to have great truth, like the fifth epical revelation, you have to have the courage to face the other side of the blade. Truth is a double-edged sword. It not only cuts forward into that which you want to go into, that which you want to go forward into, but it cuts back into that which you already have. You have to be willing to let that sword prune you, reform you. All your preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices have to be pruned. They have to be reformed. There's no way you can open yourself up to that unless you have great courage. Courageous and independent cosmic thinking. All right, let's take a moment here.